Right, so welcome to 20B. I have a couple of announcements. First, there's going to be a midterm on Wednesday. The second midterm. Don't worry, it isn't today. It's next Wednesday. And this is March 1st. And the location will be exactly the same as last time. It'll be in Pepper Canyon 109, which is right over there. It's the room right there. Okay. So that's the first announcement. Okay, and it's at 7 p.m. So 7 p.m. to 7:50. The other announcement is today what we're going to do is finish up discussing improper integrals. And in particular, I'll talk about the comparison theorem, which is a technique for bounding or, it's a technique for sometimes showing that an integral converges or diverges without actually computing an integral. So it's very useful. It's not too difficult to see why it works, but it's extremely useful in practice for solving problems that might otherwise seem totally impossible. So that's what we'll do today. Next, we're going to start on sequences and series. And this will be chapter 11 of the book. So you'll notice that we'll skip from chapter 7 to chapter 11. And of course, what we're skipping is chapters 8, 9, and 10. We're actually going to go back to chapter 9, which is about differential equations, after we do sequences and series. And we're going to do sequences and series very quickly, much more quickly than you might think looking at the book. I'm going to skip a couple of things, and I'll tell you exactly what we're skipping, so you don't have to read that in the book if you don't want to. But we'll spend some time on that next time. Today we'll mainly look at improper integrals. So before I start, are there any questions? Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write 5 integrals on the board. Each integral is an improper integral, and in each case we're going to decide whether or not it converges or diverges, and this will illustrate various techniques for understanding convergence or divergence of improper integrals. So here are the 5 integrals that we'll consider. So the first one is the integral from minus 1 to 3 of 1 over x minus 2 dx. The second integral is integral from 0 to infinity of cosine squared of x divided by 1 plus x squared dx. The third integral is integral from 0 to infinity of 1 divided by x plus e to the minus 2x dx. The fourth one is integral from 0 to 1, e to the minus x divided by square root of x dx. And the last one is integral similar to this one. The only difference is there's no square root. Integral from 0 to 1, e to the minus x over x dx. And the one, so what is one thing that every integral on the board has in common?
Some sort of discontinuity?
Yes, something's wrong. There's some discontinuity, or one of the endpoints of the integration is infinity. So with for these two, you have infinity as an endpoint of integration, so it's an improper integral in each case. Here, the function has a pole somewhere in the interval over which you're integrating. It has a pole at 2. It blows up at 2. That's a problem there. Here, at one of the endpoints, namely 0, this function has a pole, and likewise here. So each of these are examples of improper integrals. So in each case, there are two questions that you can ask about it. You can ask, does the integral converge? That is, does it define, is there an actual number that this integral is equal to? And the second question, if you know the answer to the first, would be to figure out what the number is equal to. We won't focus so much on the second question, except maybe saying something about it. These integrals have been specifically chosen, for the most part, not all of them, but some of them, to be difficult to just simply compute antiderivatives for the integrands. But let's start out with something that looks pretty easy. Let's start with the first one. Here's what you might have done, say, 2 weeks ago, when confronted with the first integral. So this is what you might have done. I'll put a big quotes around the equal sign, because in fact this is wrong. But here's what I'll do. Well, using the fundamental theorem of calculus, this integral should be equal to, well, find an antiderivative of this function, for example, log of absolute x minus 2, and take the value of 3 and subtract off the value of minus 1. So that's equal to log of 1 minus log of 3, which log of 1 is 0, so this is minus log of 3. So you can then conclude, right, that this integral converges and its value is minus log of 3. Is there anything wrong with what I just did? Over there. Sorry. Say that again.
If you plug in 2,
yeah,
it will be 0, so it doesn't make any fun.
Right, so this has a pole at 2. And the fundamental theorem of calculus is if you have a continuous function on a closed interval, then you can compute the integral over that closed interval by finding an antiderivative and taking the difference of that antiderivative at the two endpoints. But this is not a continuous function on a closed interval. It's not even defined, as you said, at 2. So this is wrong. And the question still remains, does this improper integral converge or not? Is there even a definition of what this means? Just doing this doesn't give you what it is. So last time I told you how to define an improper integral, or at least how to decide whether or not it makes sense. What you do is at each point where the function has a pole, you take the limit as you approach that point. So what this is really equal to is either it's undefined or it's equal to the following sum. Limit as t goes to 2 from below of the integral from minus 1 to t, 1 over x minus 2 dx, plus the limit as t goes to 2 from above of the integral from t to 3, 1 over x minus 2 dx. Now, it's only equal to this sum, assuming that both of these limits exist. So now, in order to finish this problem, we have to decide whether or not both of these limits exist. And if they both exist, then we can evaluate, and we'll find what the area, if you like, under the or between the x-axis and the graph of this function is. So let's figure out what each of these are. So can you just replace minus 1 by, or can you just replace t by 2 here and then evaluate using the fundamental theorem of calculus?
No.
You should evaluate it and get this integral as a function of t, and then compute the limit. So we'll focus only on the first one for a moment. I'm going to ignore this other part. This is the limit as t goes to 2 from below of, and now, again, the antiderivative is just like before, log of x minus 2, and then this is from minus 1 to t. This is the limit as t goes to 2 from below of log of t minus 2, absolute value, minus log of absolute value minus 1. This is 0 here. And what's the limit as t goes to 2 of log of t minus 2? So what happens to log is the input to log goes to 0. That's what's happening here. Negative infinity. So this diverges. And what does that mean about this integral? Is it a convergent or divergent improper integral?
Divergent.
Absolutely. This is a divergent integral because when you write it as a sum of limits of integrals that do make sense, that are just normal, they're not improper integrals, you write it as a sum of limits of proper integrals, well, it turns out that at least one of those limits diverges. It doesn't converge to a fixed number. And that means that this improper integral diverges. So now we've completely done one. Is there anything left to do with one? No, I mean, it's not, it just doesn't, there's nothing more to say, at least in this class, about one. Yes? Stefan?
We've got a difference in infinities, why can't we just use L'Hopital's rule?
So, L'Hopital's rules for example, taking limits where you have something that converges to, well, I mean, there are a couple of different contexts, but that's more for taking quotient, for limits of quotients, where the numerator and denominator say both go to zero or both go to infinity. So it's just, you just apply it in a different context. Am I misunderstanding your question, or?
Yeah, how do we conclude from the fact that both of those terms diverge and the whole thing diverges?
This is by definition. So in this class, the definition, if you have an improper integral, you know what that is. There are a whole bunch of examples over there. You say that it diverges, you say that improper integral diverges if, when you write it as a sum of limits of usual proper integrals, any one of the things in the sum diverges. Unless every single thing in the sum, unless every single one of the limits that you're considering converges, that integral is said to diverge. Okay? So it's a very strict meaning. You don't have, there's nothing relaxing. It's a very, very strict meaning of converge. So does that answer your question?
Yeah.
But you could be clever, and for specific applications on your own later, it could turn out to really make sense to possibly, in some strange way, make more sense of a divergent integral than we're doing. But for this class, if it doesn't converge in the strongest possible reasonable sense, it doesn't converge. Okay? Yes, Cheryl, you had a question?
When we plug in negative 1, mm-hmm. would it be ln absolute value negative 3?
Did I mess up here? Let's see. Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. This should be ln of minus 3. This won't affect the fact that this goes to minus infinity, but you're absolutely right. This was incorrect as it was. This is not 0. It's log of minus 3. Thank you. Okay, so one problem down. Any other questions about the first problem? Okay, on to the second one. Now this one is a little harder because I don't know about you, but I don't know an easy way to find an antiderivative of cosine squared of x over 1 plus x squared. It doesn't seem to fit into the context of, or at least the strategy, you know how to find a lot of antiderivatives. Like this one is log of x minus 2, but what about this one? Sort of hard. Fortunately, there's a cool little trick, which goes under the name of the comparison theorem, which will allow us to either show this, at least in this case, will allow us to either show it converges or show it diverges without actually finding the value. Okay? And without actually finding an antiderivative. So it's really, really nice to know about this. So here's how it works. Remember, probably from, I don't know, day 1 or day 2 or day 3, that if you have a function f of x, and let's say this graph looks kind of like that, and you have another function g of x, whose graph maybe looks like this. And let's say, as the picture I've drawn indicates, let's suppose that these functions, let's just consider them on some closed interval from a to b. Let's suppose that g is always less than or equal to f on this interval. So assume that g of x is less than or equal to f of x, as in the picture. Then there's a relationship between the integral from a to b of f of x and the integral from a to b of g of x. So fill in the blank. What kind of relationship do you see visibly there? Yes, less than. Or less than or equal, because with this hypothesis, g and f would be the same, also less than or equal. And it's pretty clear here in the picture. Just to keep it exactly like in the picture, and like in the theorem I'm about to state, so you can assume that they're both greater than or equal to 0. So if you have one function, and it's always at least as big as another function on an interval, and you integrate your two functions, the smaller function has an integral that's no bigger than the other integral. Or so this little statement right here, which is very intuitively obvious, and actually isn't hard to prove, just from the definition of the integral in terms of Riemann sums. In the Riemann sums, when you divide this up into little pieces, you would always find that the Riemann sum that approximates this integral is less than or equal to the Riemann sum that's approximating this one. So it's not hard to see that this is true. But it's really, really useful if you want to try to understand convergence or divergence without having to get really, really frustrated trying to compute an integral. So our goal right here for this particular one is to decide whether or not it converges or diverges. And I don't know how to compute this integral. So I'm going to try to cleverly figure out whether it converges or diverges without finding this integral using this little observation. Okay? So now all we have to do is try to think of some function. Well, first we have to decide to ourselves, do we think it's going to converge or diverge? It's a good idea to just eyeball it and try to decide from the beginning which you think is going to happen. So what's the nature of the function cosine squared of x? How does it behave as x goes to infinity? Does it blow up? Is it small? Is it bounded? What's it like?
It
oscillates. But in particular, it doesn't blow up. In fact, it's always less than or equal to,
it wobbles.
It wobbles between 0 and 1. But it doesn't get really large, doesn't get really small. It does get really small, but it doesn't. It wobbles between 0 and 1. What about 1 over 1 plus x squared? What is that function like? As x goes to infinity, how does it behave?
Goes to 0.
Goes to 0, exactly. So this is you have this function on the top that oscillates between 0 and 1, and this one that goes to 0 pretty quickly. Maybe not as quickly as some functions, but it does go to 0 pretty quickly. So the graph of this quotient looks like following. Wow. It looks like this. Actually, I drew it in the notes. So it looks almost like a ball bouncing. It goes like this. So this is what a graph of cosine squared x over 1 plus x squared looks like. Now, what do you think the integral is going to be? Do you think just from eyeballing the graph and what I've said, do you think this will converge or diverge? Just make a guess.
Converge,
that's a good guess. And you might be right. You should make a guess for starters. As a little warm-up, here's a really simple integral that looks similar to that one. Let's figure out whether or not it converges or diverges. Integral from 0 to infinity, actually, I'll make it even easier. Integral from 1 to infinity, 1 over x squared dx. Let's figure out whether or not that converges or diverges. Okay? And this one you can do pretty directly because it's easy to integrate 1 over x squared. So this is the limit as t goes to infinity of the integral from 1 to t, 1 over x squared dx. And this is the limit as t goes to infinity of let's see. So minus 1 over x, 1 t, is that right? Yeah. Okay, and then this is the limit as t goes to infinity of minus 1 over t plus 1. And what's that limit equal to? 1. So it converges. The value of this improper integral is equal to 1. And that might inform your guess. This pretty complicated looking integral, cosine squared x over 1 plus x squared, well, it's not really that much different than 1 over x squared in the limit. The top just oscillates between 0 and 1, and 1 over 1 plus x squared is even smaller than 1 over x squared when x is large. So maybe we could somehow leverage the fact that we really understand this easy integral to decide whether or not this converges. If you graph 1 over 1 plus x squared, it's going to look something like this. Well, maybe. I mean, it would be nice if it does. We should check. I'm just very roughly graphing it. So let's see, is there a relationship between cosine squared x over 1 plus x squared and 1 over x squared? So let's just see if there's some relationship between these two, kind of like we had over here. First, notice that both of these functions are always greater than or equal to 0. And let's just assume that x is greater than or equal to 1. So, well, let's just hope that this is true and then try to prove it. Okay? So this is, yes, please.
Wouldn't it be easier to use 1 over 1 plus x squared than that?
You certainly could.
Then that inequality would be easier. Then that inequality would be obviously true in the antiderivative. I'm sure half the kids can, half the people can say it pretty quickly what it is.
But what about the other half of the people? They can do this one too. This one's even easier. But now that you bring up that approach, that's exactly what I wrote in the notes. Use 1 over 1 plus x squared. So you can read about that here. But this is also true. If you just cross-multiply, you can check it. Look, if you cross-multiply, you get x squared cosine squared x less than or equal to 1 plus x squared. And that's certainly true because cosine squared of x is less than or equal to 1. So this is x squared times something that's less than or equal to 1. That's certainly less than or equal to 1 plus x squared. Okay? So this inequality is true. So, in fact, for every x greater than or equal to 1, the graph of 1 over x squared is above the graph of cosine squared of x over 1 plus x squared. And that means that the integral from, say, 1 to t, cosine squared of x over x squared plus 1 dx, this is less than or equal to the integral from 1 to t of 1 over x squared dx. Now we know that the limit as t goes to infinity of this is equal to 1. And this number that you get here, this is always less than or equal to that one. As t gets bigger, how do these integrals change? If you have a nice graph of a function, and the function is always above the x-axis, how As you compute the area and go farther and farther out, how does the area change? Does it get bigger, smaller, stay the same? What do you think? What?
Gets smaller.
No, just the total area, not the area under a little piece at the end. So how would this integral change as t gets bigger and bigger? How would the value that you get here, if you were to exactly compute it, change?
It gets larger, but as x increases, it gets larger by a less and less amount.
Exactly. So as the t increases, it's going to get larger and larger and larger. It doesn't get smaller. And it's bounded above, because this is always less than or equal to 1, if you compute the limit. So the fact that this is getting bigger and bigger, and it's less than or equal to 1, tells us that this limit converges. So the limit as t goes to infinity of the integral from 1 to t, cosine squared of x over x squared plus 1 dx. I don't know what it is. It's some number. I have no clue what it is, except it's less than or equal to 1. Because for every value of t, this thing is less than or equal to 1. And this function that we're taking the limit of, it's always less than or equal to 1. So this converges. So it converges to something less than or equal to 1. Now I'm going to formalize what I just did as the comparison theorem. But the conclusion that you can make is that this integral doesn't diverge, it converges. The reason it converges is because it's bounded by some other function, and that other function has an integral that converges. I'll just formulate this as essentially an easy statement, kind of a black box that you can use to prove convergence of certain improper integrals. So here's the comparison theorem. So suppose you have functions f and g, just like over here. F and g are functions, they're continuous. And they're defined from a to infinity. So they're defined starting at some point a, going forever to the right. And assume that relationship holds, and 0 less than or equal to g of x less than or equal to f of x for every x in the interval from a to infinity. So suppose you're in that situation, then you can make two conclusions. One, if the improper integral from a to infinity f of x dx converges, then I get to make a conclusion about the improper integral from a to infinity of g of x dx. What conclusion do you think I can make?
It converges.
You're absolutely right, that it converges. Perfect. And this also converges. And this is exactly what I just used over here in the case of cosine squared of x over 1 plus x squared, where I let a equal 1. See? That's what I'm using here. Two, you can also use this to show divergence. So it's part 1 of the theorem. Part 2 of the theorem. If the improper integral from a to infinity g of x dx diverges, then...
But g of x is bigger than f of x, so...
No, smaller. G is smaller. Even though it's later in the alphabet. It's annoying because the order's this way. I'm just trying to match that. Is that what confused? It's just, it's, maybe it's a bad choice. Sorry about that. But who's to say that later letters in the alphabet should be bigger? Maybe they're smaller. Depends, maybe you get tired as you're writing the alphabet and the letters get smaller and smaller. Then this, what do you think? Is it going to diverge or converge? What can you conclude? Diverges, excellent. Okay, and that's it. That's the comparison theorem, at least. Say that again, please. I think it's actually this way. So, the first one, are you okay with the first one? Now let's go to the second one. So what the second one says is something I haven't illustrated at all for you yet with the pictures. It says that in this picture, imagine that this thing down here, actually maybe after a while it's sort of high. Imagine if the bottom curve diverged, if the area under the bottom curve were infinite, if you like. Then that would mean, that would force the area under the bigger curve to be even more infinite. And this other one would diverge. So it switches around. For convergence, you have to bound above by a function whose integral converges. For divergence, if you want to prove divergence of an improper integral, you have to find a function that is less than or equal to your function, and it diverges. That will force divergence of your integral. Okay? So you have to be careful because they're sort of back and forth. But you don't really have to even remember this so much as to just imagine a picture. And if you had a function that's below, whose graph is below the graph of another function, and the graph that's below, if the area under that is huge, if it diverges, then that's going to force the area under the higher graph to also diverge. And conversely, if the higher graph, if the total area under it is really small, so the integral converges, likewise, the one that's underneath it will certainly have to converge. Okay? You still look dubious. So I haven't convinced you. Can you ask another question, maybe? Well, I'll show you with more examples, okay? Any questions? Yeah, Stefan.
This isn't really an error, but why do f and g need to be continuous? No matter how choppy that curve is, the areas are still going to be bounded by the inequality.
The main reason they're continuous is because in this course, I think we only defined integrals for continuous functions. But in general, one defines integrals for measurable functions. Or integral functions. We define integrals only for integral functions. But in this course, you take the sort of strongest possible assumption you can make on a function, namely that it's continuous. Well, in the context of this course, from the point of view of integration, that's an extremely strong assumption to make on a function. But certainly if you had a function like this that suddenly goes like that, you can make sense of the integral from A to B. We don't do that in at least 20b, but you would just break it up into two pieces and it would be that sum plus this sum. But we're not doing that in here. Okay. The only situation where we're considering things that aren't continuous is when we consider functions that have a pole at one point, say. And that we do consider. But even then, it's interesting and kind of subtle what happens. So a good question for you. Take the function that is 1 on rational numbers and 0 on irrational numbers. That's a function from A to B, or on any interval. It's not at all continuous. And the integral of using Riemann sums isn't defined for that particular function. So you can make up really wild functions that aren't continuous and for which the integral doesn't exist. OK, so we've got through two of the 5 examples. We're almost out of time, so we better fly through the others. But now that we have this theorem, it shouldn't be too hard. So let's look at the next one. Integral from 0 to infinity of 1 over x plus e to the minus 2x. OK, quick, what do you think is going to happen? Is it going to diverge or converge?
Diverge.
OK, diverge. Any other quick guesses? I mean, the first step in trying to apply this theorem is to guess. There's nothing else you can do except guess. You have to guess, you have to sort of put your money on either it converging or diverging, and then you try to show it. And if it doesn't work out and you can't show it, then you switch your bet and you go the other way. But there's no, like, you can't just eyeball it unless you've already seen something similar and just immediately know. You have to kind of guess. You have to make a guess. Just make a guess. Yell out your guess. On 3. 1, 2, 3.
Diverge.
Okay, a lot of people think they'll diverge. That's what I heard. More than not. So these sort of problems can make you sort of nervous because you don't know what you're supposed to do. You don't know what you're supposed to try to show, converge or diverge. Doesn't matter. Just try to show one or the other, see what happens. If it doesn't work, then try to show the other thing. The thing you have to do is be brave enough to try. That's the important part. Okay, so we have our function right here. It's really hard to directly compute the integral of this. At least I don't know how to do it. So we're going to try to show that it diverges, since that's the popular opinion. So what we want to do is try to find a function that is less than or equal to this, And then show that the integral for that function diverges. And that will prove that the integral for this function diverges. That this integral diverges. So we have 1 over x plus e to the minus 2x. And we want to dream up a function that is less than or equal to this function from 0 to infinity, and for which it's easy to compute the integral from 0 to infinity. Okay? And if we do that, then we'll hopefully be able to use that to show something about this. Now, here's a really dumb guess. 0. Take the 0 function. Certainly valid. You can plug it into this comparison theorem. You can compute the integral from 0 to infinity of the 0 function, and that actually converges, so you get no conclusion, because this says that if it diverges and this diverges, and with the 0 function you would have, if this converges, which we don't know anything about, then the 0 function would converge. So you could use any function you want, but you might not get any information. You have to be imaginative and just think up something. Okay, so what do you want to put here? Any ideas? Any ideas?
1 over x.
Very good, 1 over x. So is that true? Why do you think it's not true? This is only for x greater than or equal to 0.
Just plug in 0. 1 over 1 is not greater than infinity.
Looks like they'll have to guess again. But it was a good first start. Is there any way to easily modify this to try to make it work? Wait, I want to see. I'm sure that you can figure it out. So two guesses, can you guess again? I hear the right answer. I just don't hear it loudly.
1 over e is -2.
Plus 1. That's good. 1 over x plus 1. And that actually works because just cross-multiply. It's kind of hard to see what's going on when everything's with fractions. You just cross-multiply because every function that we're considering here is positive, actually, on the interval we're considering it. You don't have to change the sign of the direction of the inequality, so just cross-multiply. X plus 1 greater than or equal to x plus e to the minus 2x. So is that true? Well, it's exactly the same as asking, is 1 greater than or equal to e to the minus 2x for x greater than or equal to 0? And the answer is yes, that's true. Because if you put in, this is a decreasing function of x, it's the biggest when x is equal to 0, and what is e to the 0? That's equal to 1. So it starts at 1 and goes down. So just by very slightly modifying your initial guess, you do get something that works. So, if you don't know for sure, just write something down and look at it, see what goes wrong, and then modify it slightly. Okay, so that's great. That's exactly the right thing to do. This is perfect. So now all you have to do is try to decide the simpler question, does this integral, does this improper integral from 0 to infinity, dx over x plus 1, does that converge or diverge? Now you'll recall that only moments earlier, we decided that the integral of 1 over x, we decided the integral 1 over x squared dx converges. Does that tell us that the one that I put down right here also converges? Certainly not, because it's x rather than x squared. So let's just compute it. This one, fortunately, is easy. Limit t goes to infinity log absolute value x plus 1. Zero to t, so that's limit t goes to infinity log of t plus 1. An absolute value minus log of 1, which is 0. So does that converge or diverge? Does that converge or diverge?
Diverge.
Diverges. Excellent. So this diverges, and that tells us that this improper integral diverges. And now we run over to our comparison theorem, and it says if this integral diverges, the one below diverges, then the other integral, the one we're really interested in, also diverges. So this implies the fact that this smaller integral diverges tells us that this one also diverges. Great. Are we done?
Yeah.
Yes, we're completely done. There's nothing more to do on this problem. Any questions? Yes, please.
Now how you edit, right?
Yes. Did I?
You just add one source.
Wait, where did I add one? Oh, right here. Yeah, it's really weird. You get to choose absolutely any function you want. The only constraint is that g of x be less than or equal to f of x when you put it in here. So in this case, this thing has to be smaller than or equal to f of x. You could have put 2 in down there, and if it were still true, and it would be, then you'd have a 2 here, and everything works out. So you get a, it's a little frustrating because you don't know exactly what to do, but on the other hand, you have an incredible amount of, there are just uncountably many different possible choices for the function you can plug into the comparison theorem to try to prove divergence of an integral. Okay? So let's go on. Here's one that you can't directly apply the comparison theorem to because there's no infinities here. But you can apply the idea just as well. The idea being that if you have one function that's smaller than another function, then the integral of that smaller function is smaller than the integral of the big function. So let's deal with this one. Okay, so we have integral from 0 to 1, e to the minus x over square root of x dx. So basically we have to decide, are we going to try to prove that it diverges or converges? And then once we've decided on one of those two choices, we'll see what we can do. And if we fail miserably, then we'll switch back and try to show the other one. So what's a guess? Just shout out what you want to show, and we'll try the one that I hear the most.
Diverge.
Okay, a lot of people want to try diverge. Let's try to prove this thing diverges. So in order to show it diverges, you want to find something that's smaller than it, that's easy to compute the integral of, that diverges. Okay? So what is smaller than e to the minus x over root x on the interval from 0 to 1? By the way, this has a pull at 0, which is why we're worried at all. So can you think of anything that's smaller than this? Stefan.
E to the negative 1 over square root of x.
Okay, let's see. Do you guys agree with that? Is that true?
1 over square root.
One wouldn't work because I think e to the minus, when x equals 1, here you have e to the minus 1, and there you would have 1 over 1, so it wouldn't quite work out. But this actually does work. If you just cross-multiply again, the root x's just disappear, and you're just saying e to the minus x is bigger than or equal to e to the minus 1. So that's okay. Okay, so this function right here is less than or equal to that function. Let's instead consider this integral, integral from 0 to 1, 1 over root x dx. Okay? And now we hope that this integral diverges, because if it does, then we'll be able to show that this one diverges. Of course, we better not hope too much, because maybe it won't diverge. And in which case, we'd be trying to show something false. Bad to hope for false things, because you might be disappointed. So this is E inverse limit as t goes to 0 of, OK, what's an antiderivative of x to the minus 1 half? So look right, 2x to the 1 half plus c. If you differentiate that, you end up with x to the minus 1 half. So this is 2 x to the 2 square root of x from 0 to t. And then that's e inverse. And then this is a limit as t goes to 0 of 2 root t minus 0. What's that limit?
2.
It's 0. Whoa. That seems dubious. That can't possibly be right, but I messed up, obviously.
Yeah, 0.
Ah, right. Oops. Thank you. So, but it's still kind of a similar thing. We have 2 square root of 1 minus 2 root t, you're taking the limit as t goes to 0, and you get 2. Big surprise, that doesn't diverge, that converges. So what can we conclude?
It converges.
Nope. What do you say,
Stephen? You drop a power of either minus one.
We're trying to keep it there.
For the last step.
No, it's still. Oh, you're right. Thank you very much. Okay, what can you conclude now? Using whatever analog, using what I showed you so far. We have this function, e to the minus x over root x. It's graph. I have absolutely no idea what its graph looks like, but it looks like something. We have this other function, e to the minus 1 over root x, which is easy to compute the integral. And its graph looks like something else that's a little bit smaller. And this one converges. What can you conclude?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. You're right. This tells you nothing. So you have to start over. So you can either try another function below, or you can change your mind and decide, hey, maybe this does converge, and then try to prove it converges by bounding it above and computing an integral. Okay? In fact, all you have to do is notice, I'm going to change the board a little, if you change this e to the minus 1 to e to the minus 0, then I think that's actually true, right?
So it's 4 over 7.
Because this is a decreasing function, and its biggest value is at 0, so this is true. And now when you integrate this one, you'll find that it converges, since it's exactly the same integral that we just did, except you have an e to the minus 0 instead of an e to the minus 1 here. So this function, 1 over root x, this is greater than or equal to e to the minus x over root x on the interval from 0 to 1. And the improper integral from 0 to 1 of this function, converges. And what does that allow us to conclude? It allows us to conclude that this improper integral converges. So this does converge. Does it tell us the value of this one? Does it tell us anything about the value of this one?
Yes.
It tells us a little bit. The value, whatever it is less than or equal to 2. The actual value turns out to be very hard to get as an exact number, but it's approximately 1.493648265. That's what this integral is. Yep. But I don't know exactly what it is, but I do know that this integral is less than or equal to e to the 0, that one up here, it's less than or equal to e to the 0 integral from 0 to 1, 1 over root x, dx, that's e to the 0 times that, e to the 0 times this, and that's 2, the 0. So, using something similar to the comparison theorem, you think of it as common sense, you see that this integral converges. You don't know exactly what it converges to, but you know that it's less than or equal to 2. Okay. The last one, I don't have time to go into detail, but it looks almost the same as this one. The only difference is that you have x instead of square root of x. Do you think this one diverges or converges?
Diverges,
you're right. It diverges. And the way you see it is doing just what we did before, except instead of square root of x here, you have x. You have the same thing that we did before, but when you find this limit, you find that it diverges. Because you'll end up with a log instead of a root t. Okay? I have lots of extra copies of the notes for you to get. If you have questions, feel free to ask. I didn't get them from the TA. I do have the grades on the quizzes, if you want that.
I see.
Yeah, I have to look it up on my computer, but we have time.
I see. That's okay. I'll just go.
Okay, you can always email me. I can send you the grade. Okay. Yes?
I don't have the last one. Okay.
Yeah, I went really quickly. Sorry about that.
Yeah, this one didn't work out because it
did converge, which was no good.
Yeah, it converges over an area. This is when you have this inequality. Mm-hmm. That's good for showing
it divergence.
But it just, I mean, it's going to be hard to show this divergence.
And you know that this one's smaller than this one is cross multiplied.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, so when you cross multiply, it gets rid of the square root of x's.
Okay.
And then you have e to the minus x greater than or equal to e to the minus 1. Well, e to the minus x is a decreasing function. And you're going from 0 to 1. So you just take the smallest value that that function takes on, and it's value at minus 1. Okay. Or actually at 1. So.
And how, like, why did you ended up at this because you got this and you got the antiderivative
mm-hmm.
and disintegrated?
Yep. And I took the limit at the end to get 2. Because you have e to the minus 1, you have 2 minus 2 root 2. Then we take limit as t goes to 0 of 2 minus 2 root t. This just goes to 0, so you end up with just 2. Okay, and then I go, oh no, this is no use.
But how did you get it?
Same thing, e to the minus x is a decreasing function. This should be an x, I guess it is an x. E to the minus x is a decreasing function on the interval from 0 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
So it's biggest at the beginning of the interval.
Okay.
So it's biggest at 0, and that's why you have this. And you can prove e to the minus x is decreasing by taking its derivative and noticing that it's negative or just drawing
a
graph.
So it's bigger than 0, so you put that right there?
Yeah, well, maybe it'll help if I just draw a graph. So e to the minus x looks something like that, okay?
Yeah.
Goes down really quickly. Its biggest value will be at 0,
yeah.
And its smallest value will be at 1. So when I wanted something that was smaller than e to the minus x over root x,
uh-huh.
I plugged in minus 1 to the top part.
Yeah.
And when I wanted something that was bigger,
yeah.
I plugged in that. I plugged in the value at 0. About that.
And then you do the same thing, the antiderivative.
Yep. The rest of the steps are identical, except you end up getting 2 instead of 2 e to the minus 1.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, everything just comes down to the picture I drew at the beginning with two functions and the fact that one integral is bigger than or equal to the other. Absolutely everything just boils down to that.
Alright.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.